Chapter 54.
Ridley, my friend, come in, come in.
The fat man's voice sounded like sand in a mixer as he welcomed Bannister into his Tel Aviv apartment for the second time in as many weeks. Thank you, Oscar, the archaeologist replied, strutting in with an air of confidence that had been notably lacking on his last visit. Gutsman led him to a sitting area where a thin, well-dressed Arab sat at a nearby desk, reviewing some documents. He looked up, eyeing Bannister with a suspicious stare.
That is Alfar, one of my curators, Gutsman said with a derisive wave of his hand.
Catching a look of caution in Bannister's face, he added,
Do not worry. His ears are safe.
Gutsman reached his favorite sitting chair and tumbled into it without grace.
Now, what is of such importance that you have called on me again so soon? He asked.
Bannister spoke quietly, buttering up his victim for the kill. Oscar, you know as well as I that hunting for history is at best speculative business. We may search for days, weeks, or even years for that one monumental discovery and still come up empty. Sure, along the way there may be important finds and occasionally the exciting piece that taps the imagination. Most of the effort usually ends up going for naught. But there is always the chance of that rare instance where the stars are in alignment and one is very, very lucky to find a singular gift from the heavens. He leaned forward in his chair for effect and stared into the fat man's eyes.
Oscar, I believe I may be on the verge of such a find. Well, what is it, my boy? Gutsman wheezed. Don't toy with me.
I was just in London for a short visit and happened to call on an antiquities dealer I've known for a number of years. He recently acquired a cache of items stolen years ago from the Church of England's archives, he lied, pausing again for effect.
Go on.
A portion of the material contained original artwork, jewelry, and artifacts liberated from the Holy Land during the Crusades. Bannister looked cautiously back and forth across the room, then added in a low voice, Included in the works was an original copy of the manifest. Gutsman's eyes inflated like balloons.
Are you serious? He rasped.
He tried to contain his excitement, but his face turned flush with exaltation.
Yes,
Bannister replied, producing an intentionally poor photocopy of the papyrus document. I have not seen the original myself, but I've been assured that it is authentic. Gutsman studied the page for several minutes without uttering a word. Only the ruffling of the page in his unsteady fingers disturbed the silent room.
It exists, he finally said in a hushed tone. I cannot believe, by God's good graces, that it has come to be.
The old man then looked at Bannister sternly.
This dealer, he will sell it to me.
Bannister nodded. Given the nature of his acquisition, he is forced to sell it quietly. That is why he has priced it at only £5 million sterling.
£5 million,
Gutsman cursed, propelling himself into a coughing fit. When he recovered his breath, he stared into Bannister's eyes.
I will never pay that, he said, finding a strong voice.
Bannister paled slightly, not anticipating the response.
I suspect the price may be negotiable, Oscar, he stuttered. And the dealer indicated he would have the document carbon-dated at his expense.
Having purchased artifacts from grave robbers to politicians, Gutsman knew how to get his price. More than that, he knew when he was being played, and the hesitation in Bannister's voice did not go undetected.
Stay here,
the fat man said, rising unsteadily from his chair and leaving the room. He returned a moment later with a thick binder. Gutsman sat down and opened it, revealing a collection of photographs encased in plastic sleeves. Ancient artifacts of assorted age and style, large and small, appeared in the photographs. Bannister recognized statues, carvings, and pottery that he knew were worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Gutzman flipped to the back of the binder, then removed several photos and handed them to Bannister.
"Take a look at these," the fat man huffed.
"Part of your collection?"
"Yes, from my storehouse in Portugal."
Bannister studied the photos. The first showed a small collection of rusty swords and spear tips. The second photo showed an iron military helmet that Bannister recognized as a Roman Heddernheim type. A thin bronze panel containing the image of an eagle, a scorpion, and several crowns appeared in the next photo. The final image was of an object undistinguishable to Bannister. It appeared to be a large, angular mass of metal that was twisted and warped on one side. "A rare collection of Roman armament," Bannister said. "I'm guessing the eagle and scorpion reliefs are part of a battle standard."
"Very good, Ridley. It's not just any standard, however, but the emblem for the Scholae Palatini, the elite Roman guards of Constantine the Great. What do you make of that last object, my friend?"
Bannister studied the photograph again, but shook his head.
"I'm afraid I don't recognize it."
Gutzman smiled in minor triumph.
"It is the bronze ram from an imperial galley ship. Based on its size, it likely came from a Liburnian birream."
"Yes, I see it now. The business end has been flattened by contact. Where on earth did you find this?"
"It was lodged in the hull of another vessel, a 4th-century Cypriot raider, if the story is to be believed. The damaged vessel ran aground and sank in a protected area of soft silt. A number of the artifacts were remarkably preserved. It wasn't long before the wreck was picked over by local divers, well before the state archaeologists arrived on the scene. A wealthy collector snatched up most of the items before the authorities knew what had been removed."
"Let me guess who the wealthy collector was," Bannister said with a smirk. Gutzman let out a gurgled laugh.
"A fortunate tip that came my way in this particular instance," he said, grinning.
"They are extremely nice pieces, Oscar. But why are you showing them to me?"
"I purchased these artifacts many years ago, and for many years I have thought about the rumor of the manifest. Is it true? Could the cargo possibly exist? Then, one night, I had a dream. I dreamt that I was holding the manifest in my hands, much like I held your copy today. And in my mind, I see Roman weapons and artifacts around me. But not just any artifacts. I see these artifacts," he said, pointing to the pictures.
"We often dream the reality we seek," Bannister said. "You really think there is a connection between the manifest and these Roman relics? Couldn't they have come from any sea engagement?"
"Not just any sea engagement would involve the Scholae Palatini. You see, they were the successors to the Praetorian Guard, who were wiped out by Constantine at the Battle of Milvian Bridge, when he routed Maxentius and consolidated the empire. No, it's clear to me that the Cypriot vessel tangled with a galley of imperial decree."
"Does the vessel itself date to the proper era?" Gutzman smiled again.
"The vessel, as well as the armaments and artifacts, all consistently date to approximately 330 A.D. "Then, there is this," he said, pointing to a weathered Roman shield in one of the photographs.
Bannister had missed it in his first viewing, but now noticed the shield beside the spear tips, featuring a faded Key-Row cross across its center.
"The cross of Constantine," Bannister muttered. "Not only that, but the papyrus from Caesarea adds weight to the theory," Gutzman said. "The dream is real, Ridley. If your manifest is true, then I have already heard the voice of Helena through my own artifacts."
Bannister's eyes lit up with intrigue at the possibility of it all. "Tell me, Oscar," he asked pointedly, "where was the shipwreck discovered?"
The vessel was found near the village of Pisuri on the southern coast of Cyprus. Perhaps it is not impossible that the actual cargo of the manifest is buried in the vicinity, he speculated with raised brows. Now, that would be a gift from the heavens, would it not, Ridley? Indeed, the archaeologist said, the wheels turning in his head. It would be a discovery for the ages. But alas, we are jumping the gun. I must examine the manifest first and see if it is indeed authentic. You tell your London friend I'm willing to pay £100,000 for it. But I will require the carbon dating and a personal examination first, he said, rising to his feet. £100,000, Bannister replied, his voice the one now rasping. Yes, and not a penny more. The old collector patted Bannister on the shoulder. Thank you for coming to me first, Ridley. I believe that we are on the path to glorious things here. Bannister could only nod in disappointment as he walked to the door. After he was safely down the elevator, Gutsman walked back to the living area and approached Alfar. You listened to our conversation, the fat man asked. Yes, Mr. Oscar, every word, the Arab replied in a coarse accent. But I do not understand why you do not buy this manifest. Very simple, Alfar. I am quite certain that it is Bannister who possesses the manifest, not some London broker. He is trying to bilk me mightily for it, and he yet might succeed. Then why tell him about your Roman artifacts? To plant the seed. You see, he has a gift for discovery. He now leaves here disillusioned about selling the manifest, but also bewildered, as am I, about the possibility that the artifacts actually exist. I am certain that his ego will drive him there immediately. It may be a fool's gamble, but why not try? Bannister is resourceful and lucky. If it can be found, then he is the man to do it. So why not let him find it for us? You are a smart man, Mr. Oscar. But how will you control Bannister? I want you to contact Zakhar. Tell him I have a simple surveillance job for him, one that will pay very well. He left word that he does not want to set foot in Israel for several months, if possible. Feeling the heat, is he? Gutsman said with a chuckle. No matter. You tell him not to worry. The job won't be in Israel. It's Cyprus where he'll have to earn his pay.